Joining United States Live is Stanislav Krepivnik, a retired officer of the United States Armed Forces, a military political analyst and the author of the Telegram channel, Stas There and Back. Stanislav, good morning. Glad to have you.
Good morning.
You know, Stanislav, I want to ask you this at the start of our conversation. Those losses the United States Armed Forces are suffering now in this Middle East conflict, there are increasing admissions that there are casualties. And if there is an intensification of fighting, those losses will increase. I want to ask you, which way does that push things? Toward Donald Trump and the United States escalating and stepping up the fighting? Or could those coffins coming home against the backdrop of Trump's domestic political problems play in the opposite direction? What is your view? No, Wii U is Tears and News.
Well, in America, there is very strict censorship around casualties because the public reacts poorly to losses. That is the first point. Secondly, this is the most unpopular war since they started measuring public opinion. It is less popular than the Vietnam War, and Vietnam only reached that level later, while here it started at that level. So they are very squeamish about showing casualties, but the casualties are real. Right now they are saying roughly 18 to 19 people for the entire conflict. I predicted it would be at least 10 times that number. But from what I have learned, more than 1,000 people have already been killed there, and many more wounded. They are simply trying to hide it all. They pay the families so they do not speak out, and so on. The same thing is happening in Ukraine. In Ukraine, the United States military has already lost a couple of hundred people. Those operators of high-mobility artillery rocket systems and others may be reclassified as mercenaries, but at the end of the day, they are still military contractors of the United States Armed Forces. Again, they pay the families so they stay quiet and do not talk about it. They are very squeamish. But yes, losses are mounting. If they send ground forces into Iran, those losses will be impossible to hide, because it will not be isolated incidents or a dozen. It will be hundreds. Hundreds openly in the field, where there are many witnesses. I do not know how they plan to do it. But what I am told is that Vance is trying, of course, to restrain Trump and stop all this. And now there is no little devil, Lindsay, who used to hiss in his ear, practically stuffing his tongue in his ear, and persuading him into all these adventures. Everyone says he is more or less starting to calm down. So we will see, because those who remain rational are of course trying to end this and pull America out as quickly as possible, at least minimally from the Middle East. Well, we will see, because Trump is a volatile, emotional person who already has weak control over his emotions. So it is hard to say which way he will go.
Stanislav, still this level of public rejection of the war in the Middle East is surprising, because usually when fighting starts somewhere due to propaganda and buildup, there is a more or less national consensus in favor, and then, as you correctly noted, a backlash sets in. When the first losses come, when it drags on, when there is no quick, impressive victory, which apparently could not be achieved against Iran, a rollback follows. Now, as you rightly noted, this war began with maximum disapproval from the majority of what was happening there. And now all of this is dragging on. Is there any sense that the public is becoming even more opposed to this war, or because of the losses, because, well, a sense of vengeance, you have to show who is boss, stirring up national pride and so on, the situation could shift in favor of carrying out these operations. Is that happening or not? Or does it stay just as unpopular or become even more unpopular.
Not only is that not happening, everything is going the opposite way. Yes, public sentiment among Americans is exactly the opposite. As soon as any conflict begins, popular support starts to evaporate. People get fired up. We stand with the armed forces, we stand with the president. That did not happen this time. And we can see it, because they keep changing the reason they started this war. They are trying to figure out how to sell it to the public, and they have not been able to sell it. There are other problems as well. Conservative Republicans, the real ones, have already broken away from Trump. And Trump, on top of that, has started attacking them. People like Nancy Mace and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who were against any war and wanted to say, let's end this. Let's go home and deal with our domestic problems, which we have plenty of. Trump has been politically destroying those true conservatives, if he has not already destroyed them. There is another angle to this. The pro-Israel lobby has become too closely tied to the Republicans, and many Democrats have begun to pull away. And now Democrats suddenly realize this is a great issue to hit Trump with. Because Democrats who otherwise would be in Israel's pocket see that they are losing primaries to more left-wing candidates who are winning on an anti-Israel, anti-Iran, anti-war platform. And those Democrats are asking themselves, do we really need this? No, and we could actually score some points against Trump if we use this against him. Attacks on Trump are starting from all sides. It is not just that people are tired. Those who used to support him, like Carlson and similar figures, say the independent vote now amounts to almost 80% of voters. In America, people are abandoning both parties, or rather one party with two wings. And now it is all in question. Where will those independent votes go, and to whom? So, there is alarm from every direction. Clearer-headed figures, like Vance, understand this well and are trying to slow it down. Trump is, of course, surrounded by sycophants who back everything he says because they themselves want power. It is the same with Hextus and the same with Bessette. People, even if they understand this is going the wrong way, are too cowardly to speak up. It is hard to say. Trump is the kind of person who sobers up one day and then forgets everything the next. Suddenly, Zelensky's best friend and pushing for war against Russia because he went to the Group of Seven and then to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and everyone there persuaded him. He is the kind of person who is surprisingly easy to persuade in the wrong direction. In the roar.
Stanislav, by the way, about Tucker Carlson. In his latest comment, he said that maybe Trump did not want this military operation in Iran, but that he is not acting independently in this case. Well, that may be so. You know, I wanted to talk more about the armed forces of the United States of America. We spoke back when Biden and the Democrats were in power, and at that time we discussed the serious shortfall in recruitment for the United States Armed Forces across its various branches. And you argued that people who would like to serve were being driven away. Those gender policies, all those little gimmicks and whatnot that were in place, and other things. Well, a lot of time has passed since then, and Trump has been around for quite a while. Has the situation changed, based on what you know? Has recruitment to the armed forces gotten any better? Are people joining or not? So, has anything changed?
On the positive side for them, of course, Trump has again banned transgender people from the military, so they have pulled back from all that a bit. To what extent has the system improved? Back then, there was a tendency to use those gender policies to advance careers, that kind of identity politics. That has more or less been dealt with, that is true. I will add that the economy is suffering, and when the economy suffers, people always join the military in any country because it is a way to feed their families, and so on. So that is also positive in this respect. On the negative side, Of course, again, the armed forces are exhausted. That is just a place to start. You can see it most of all in the fleet itself. We saw a mutiny, an open mutiny on the Gerald Ford. When 80% of the toilets clogged up, it was not because everyone had eaten something awful. It was because sailors started flushing t-shirts, shirts, ropes, anything to deliberately jam the system. Then the ship had to turn around and go back to port to repair it all. Fire is a big issue. I think the fire on the Ford was a serious blow, because there are a couple thousand compartments that can be sealed off, so air does not move. That is exactly why an aircraft carrier is so hard to sink. It has all those sealed compartments that keep it afloat. But again, if the compartments can be sealed, so why did they fight the fire for 30 hours as it kept spreading? Why did nobody just cut off the oxygen? Well, only if there was an explosion. A fairly large explosion. Maybe an explosion from a missile or from a fairly large drone. But again, there are things, as I was told, people who served recently, former officers. There are no retired officers, no ex-officers. The point is, at first, there were not enough people. The crews are always understaffed. People are not sufficiently trained. There are simply not enough people. Their mission has remained essentially the same as at the end of the Cold War. But the fleet is half the size. When Trump set up those blockades, there were really only about six ships running back and forth, trying to control everything. The crew, of course, is exhausted. People are leaving left and right. The Ford was out of port for 11 months. That is a very long time for any ship and for any crew. And for the technical systems as well, of course, and for the people. When those people came back, you can be sure most of them had quit. Those who could went home and told their brothers, friends, sons, not to join the service. It is just an insult. And when we saw how they were being fed, it was like the Russian army in the 1990s, during total collapse. Someone even calculated it. It worked out to 1,500 to 1,800 calories a day. An adult man cannot live on that for long. That is very little food. Real hunger starts when you also have to move physically, run around, work. Well, that is just not realistic. Here we already saw the total collapse of the logistics and procurement system. Big problems are coming, and you can see it. Because this is no longer a time when you can hide it. And yes, from my own service, when we were in the barracks, they fed United States properly. But when we went into the field, it was some nasty stuff you could not even tell what you were eating. Some brown mush with a gray liquid on top. Here, this is your food. You ask, what is this? Even as an officer, you ask, what is this? They tell you, if you do not want it, do not eat. And I went the whole day without eating. Of course I would eat that disgusting stuff, because I was hungry. Look, I was in the field, and I was hungry. And here it is even worse. We have never come to the point of giving active people so little. Never, ever. Even that amount is for someone who just sits at home and does nothing. Well, 1,500 to 1,800 calories is too little for a man. And these are men. Well, not only men, there are women too, but these men have to run around all those huge aircraft carriers and do physical work. Of course, all of that blew up on the internet. Massive negative publicity. You cannot hide it now, not in this day and age. This is not the old days when someone might snap a photo in the field and it would trickle out eventually. Now everything is instant. People photograph the bad food. And it is all online. It reaches their families and their friends. Look what we eat, how they feed United States. It all feeds into the narrative that the armed forces are collapsing. You have to understand, if the airborne forces or the Marine Corps are ordered to seize an island, they will go and do it as best they can. Losses will be huge, everyone knows that, but they will go and carry out their missions. Well, that depends on how much of the mission they can actually complete. Then, there will be daily losses from drones, artillery strikes, and the heat. 50 degrees, 100% humidity, and you have to bring water from 200 kilometers away. That is almost impossible, but if the president gives the order, it will be carried out. It will be carried out partially, because the generals will not resign. And that is where the main problem starts. Any proper general should say, "No, sir, this is suicide. It is pointless. We will not carry this out, because it would mean the needless destruction of my forces. We cannot support them. This is sending a brigade to certain death." And here, I think, it is the same. The Ukrainization of the armed forces has been going on for a long time. As we saw in Klinka, when the Ukrainians simply sent two Marine battalions to their deaths, because the United States told them, "Okay, send Marines across the Dnipro," and they were wiped out within a day or two. It will have the same effect here. And the problem is that no general wants to say no, because that would mean giving up the post-military career, the big, well-paid job at some defense company, or in the media, or at a think tank, where salaries are in the millions. They obviously do not want to lose that. So they say, "Yes, sir, you want it. Okay, we will do it." And they will throw soldiers into certain death.
Stanislav, do I understand correctly that by Ukrainization, you mean the United States Army might undertake actions simply for their informational effect?
Yes, absolutely. If you look at how United States Central Command communicates and releases information, it is obvious where the Ukrainian army picked that up from. Lying, lying, denying reality. Most of the information about losses in the real situation comes from, well, different social networks. But to be honest, for the people, one of the main sources is the local media. Not United States media, but Jordanian or Kuwaiti media, which report, or even the state of Kuwait itself says, "Yes, our base was hit. Two or three of our soldiers were killed. Five or six Americans were killed, and another 10 Americans wounded." And United States Central Command says, "No, it all passed by. We shot everything down. Nothing happened. Everything was fine. 100 drones flew. We shot down 120.
Stanislav, there is very little time left, but I wanted to ask, you mentioned the possibility of a limited ground operation that the armed forces of the United States of America might conduct, like seizing Karg, some island or a stretch of coast. Do you think the forces available to the United States Army in the region would be enough for that?
There are enough troops to seize it. To hold it, that is a completely different matter. Yes, I am sure the Iranians will not necessarily leave many defensive forces there. On the contrary, they want the United States to do it. Because look at Karg Island, for example. From the center of the island to the shore, it is 36 kilometers. Who flies farther than 36 kilometers? All modern first-person view drones. Drones will be flying there every day from the mainland. The island is fairly large. There is a sizable village in the north. There is an air drone up north. An aerial drone. Aerial drone, yes, sorry. There is a water park, if you look at the map. There is a fairly large settlement that would also need to be cleared. And then what do you do? What do you bring for water? Let United States do the math. 50 degrees, 100% humidity. After all, it is an island. You would need at least 4 liters of water per person per day at that temperature. But to insert 1,000 people there, that means 4,000 liters would have to be brought in every day, about 200 kilometers or so from Kuwait. How would they bring that? Any vehicles that fly or sail there will come under fire. Evacuating the wounded would also be very difficult under those conditions. Many would simply die on the spot or on the way, and drones will be coming in nonstop, day and night. They will just keep striking and harassing them across the island with drones. I think the Iranians would be the opposite. They would gladly receive American guests. "You boys want to come there? Come on in. We will even clear a spot for you. Come on in, come on in. We are waiting for you, they say openly. Damn, it is not that we are not afraid, we want this. Please, come. So, shall we put out some candy? We will put out candy for you, and put out some cold beer, as soon as you arrive. Come on, we are waiting to destroy you. Many United States generals, of course, understand this. Well, do they have the inner courage? Do they have the backbone to tell the president? No, that would be suicide. Well, I think they lack that. Al.
Thank you very much, Stanislav. Stanislav Krapivnik, a retired officer of the United States Armed Forces, was speaking live with our studio.